You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Gunpowder Plot of 1605 hardly sounds like an ideal topic for an American play, but Bill Kane's equivocation has been hailed by critics as one of the most bracingly intelligent, sizzlingly theatrical American plays in a decade. Unfortunately, you only have through this Sunday to see what all the fuss is about at the New York City Center on West 55th Street, but I'm very pleased that we were able to invite Michael Countryman and David Furr from the cast to tell us about it. Hi.
Hello.
Now, in England, of course, Guy Fawkes Day is a day of celebration. People jump into the fountain at Trafalgar Square. How much did you know about the Gunpowder Plot before you began working on this play?
I think I had learned something about it once upon a time in another production of Macbeth at some point, because it is alluded to in there. And then I'd proceeded to forget a lot of the details. And so I had to kind of relearn some of the specifics of it. I don't know about you. Do you?
Yeah, I just knew that they burned him in effigy and lit sparklers. That's about all I knew.
Well, for those of our listeners who aren't history buffs, would you refresh our memories?
Well, the Gunpowder Plot was a plan by a bunch of Catholic fanatics to blow up Parliament. They were tired of James, and he had come into power with rumors going around that he was going to be tolerant of the Catholic faith. And, of course, they were not at all.
Now, this is just 2 years after Elizabeth has died.
Right.
And yeah. James, the deal was that James would succeed because she didn't leave an heir. But he actually turned out to be a pretty good Protestant. He's the man who commissioned the King James Bible.
That's right.
He is the King James of the King James Bible.
Not a bad accomplishment in its own right.
No.
Some people consider it the greatest single work of
many
English literature.
Many. Mm-hmm. And it's still a good read.
So the plot, Guy Fawkes and others were going to plant gunpowder under the Parliament building.
Right. Well, there are several different versions of the story of the plot, and I think it's one of the reasons that people see it as a conspiracy theory behind it, that maybe it was a put up job by the government in order to give them an excuse to really get rid of the Catholics once and for all. And Kane, in his research, came across all. In one version, they dig a huge long tunnel to get the explosives in there. In another version, they actually just go into a room that's low in the building. So it's actually Shakespeare trying to figure out what the real story is that leads him to write several versions of it.
Well, history is always told by the victors, but wasn't that something Shakespeare did pretty much throughout his career in the history plays?
Well, sure, he avoided modern history. And I don't know if it was actually...
But he always told the Tudor side of the story, didn't he?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think he kind of towed that party line. And he would try and also tell modern truths through telling histories, because you could stay out of trouble by telling the histories. But like you say, kind of toe the Tudor party line.
Well, Michael, David is talking about this as though we're talking about Shakespeare. Are we talking about Shakespeare in this play? He's called Shag here.
Yeah. No.
Although he has written a play called Lear.
I think that this play is, one of the roles I play is Richard Burbage, the greatest actor in the history of the English language, purportedly. And I.
That's a heavy weight on your shoulders, isn't it?
Boy, let me tell you. But of course, I'm not really playing Burbage. I'm playing a character who's created by Kane in order to facilitate the telling of his story. And I think the same thing is true with Shakespeare. People have asked John Pankow, what's it like? I mean, how can you possibly play Shakespeare? And the answer is, of course, he's not really. He's playing a character in a Bill Kane play.
Mm-hmm. That character comes to believe that the Gunpowder Plot is just too difficult to write about. Because he doesn't want to become just a mouthpiece for the government?
That's right. Well, I think he starts to find that the truths involved, as Michael was saying, are not quite as clear as the government would like to paint them.
But wasn't he wasn't King James a patron of Shakespeare?
Yes, I mean he made the Shakespeare and His Men the official playwright of the kingdom, and so the name was changed to the King's Men. So they would commission plays, and they would be the official king's playwrights in theater.
How much do you think this play is about that, this historic event, and how much of it is about the creative process? And we have a playwright here struggling to write something of worth, and we also see the collaboration with the actors and how that influences how this play will turn out.
I think that there are some aspects in it that are about the creative process, but I think and a lot of the comedy actually comes from that. Artistic struggles is observed by a guy who's tried to actually stage the mad scene in King Lear and seen how ridiculously
for the first
impossible
time.
It is.
And the actor makes that point.
Yes, yeah.
As actors will.
Yes, they will. It's also, I think, for Bill about Shakespeare trying to find a moral ground, a way to tell the story and tell the truth, but also not bite the hand that feeds him. So that's a huge conflict of interest for him.
Also the hand that might cut his head off as
right.
well.
Right.
Because we are talking at a different time.
Yeah.
But it also must have been amusing to be rehearsing a play that starts off about, or not, well, very quickly gets into rehearsals mm-hmm. on the stage.
Yeah, and not only rehearsals, but as Michael was saying, these actors that are tackling the scene on the heath of King Lear for the very first time. I mean, actors for, you know, hundreds of years now have struggled with what to do with that scene. So it's kind of fun to go back and say, you know, these are the first guys who are looking at the original script and you know, butting up their heads against the wall here.
My guests are David Furr, who plays Sharp, another one of the actors, actually the actor who is really wants to become a star, the young mm-hmm. hot actor wants to become a star, also plays King James I, and Michael Countryman, who plays Richard and Henry Garnett. And is it fair to say that there's a third theme here, and that has to do with the aftermath of the plot at the time and its parallels to 9/11?
Oh, I think it's fair, certainly. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I think Bill is addressing, and this is, I think he has said, is his response to September 11th and the times since then. And the idea of, you know, using an event and the fear from that event to, you know, tip the scales in a country. And so there is that metaphor that is going on. And you know, one hopes that it's there without being too heavy-handed or anything like that. And that was something that, you know, Bill has struggled with and that we in rehearsals would work on to try and, you know, have that be alive but not, you know, in your face.
Well, we even have towers here, only in this case it's the Towers of London.
Right, that's true. So you have the terrorist aspect, but you also have the aspect of a very oppressive government, which is causing these terrorist acts to happen, actually. And I think that's one of the things that attracted the director, Gary Hines, to the piece.
Well, Gary Hines, who we should point out is a woman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's
Irish.
Been on the show. But Bill Kane, did you have much interaction with him?
Yeah.
Because you keep on talking about Bill. He's a Jesuit priest, isn't he?
He is, yes. Just like Henry Garnett in the play. Mm-hmm. And Bill was around during the process. He was in, especially in the beginning, as we all sat down at the table doing table work with the play to figure out, you know, make sure that we as actors understood the history behind it and just, you know, page to page, what's going on, what's happening. And then we would rehearse, and Bill would come in, and he would answer more questions for us and that sort of thing. So he was around. Not on a daily basis, necessarily, but around.
Did you talk to him about the title, Equivocation?
Well, it's all in there. It's all part of it. It's very much the inspiration for the piece. And equivocation is actually a technique that the Jesuits used to protect themselves in this specific time. So the first time, David and I actually did some readings of this play before they decided to produce it. And the first time you read this thing, you really don't know what the heck's going on. It works on so many different levels. So Bill was invaluable as sort of a resource to say, okay, look, this is why this is happening. This is why this is happening.
And the subtitle of the play is interesting. It's based on a lie about a true story.
It's true.
Yeah. And then when you do theater, you are creating a story, and then and somebody else does a version of this play, and it becomes a different story. which is one of the magical things about theater, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many Hamlets have there been? How many really different Hamlets and how many different Lears have there been over the last 400 years?
I mean, who can tell you? I mean, but that's one of the things, especially something like Hamlet. I would like to see many people play that role because there is so much. You would think that there would be so much there that there's only, you know, one way to play it in a way, but it's quite the opposite. There's so much there that I would love to see women play it in different, you know, men and all kinds of ages, just because they'll bring different things to it. So,
well, as we pointed out, the both of you play very different characters, two very different characters. So what happened during rehearsal? Did you tend to focus on one for some rehearsals and then the other, or did you just switch back and forth?
Well, you know, you work your way through the play, and one of the things that I find for myself is that you're using different aspects of your own personality, obviously, to portray a certain character. And when you're doing multiple characters, like a lot of us do in this play, they tend to help define each other because you focus in on a certain aspect of your personality, and then you go to another part of who you are to get this job done, and they wind up really making each other more vivid.
Well, do you feel that your two characters are very, very different?
I do, yeah. I think, and I think Kane did it, did that on purpose. He has portrayed the actor as an extremely domineering bully, somebody who's got an ego the size of downtown Manhattan, and then he's got this Jesuit priest who, I mean, if there was ever a superhero who was a Jesuit, this guy would be it. So he has a great fondness for the ego of the actor, but I think he has a deep love for the Jesuit and what he represents.
At one point, David, you're sitting in the audience as King James, and next you're a prisoner.
That's right. Well, and especially at the end of the play, when we are performing a production of Macbeth, for the king, I jump up and, you know, I have about a half a page where I have different lines as different characters all in a row. And so, you know, those are very quick changes. And then, as you say, there's another character where I play a prisoner in a jail cell. And that's a third character, but not at the same half page of jumping back and forth.
Do you think of this character, Shag, as being Shakespeare or some character who's kind of like Shakespeare?
I don't think of him as being Shakespeare. I mean, you know, we can't
he's
really...
called Shakespeare.
He's called, I mean, which is one of the spellings of the name that I think Bill liked. And but, you know, the way that John plays him is as he says, just a guy that, you know, puts on his pants one leg at a time. And he does such a good job of doing that, making him human and real and not this icon on a pedestal, that it's not hard for us, I'll speak for myself, but in the play to just regard him as, you know, as a colleague who... you know, you see every day and have struggles with and admiration for. And
he's also a man at this point that's going through a sort of a crisis about his son, who he has lost. And so it's...
Hamnet. Very close to Hamlet.
Yes, Hamnet, I think. At this time in history, you know, there was... whether you were Catholic or Protestant, everybody was Christian. And hell was a reality, as was heaven. So the character's concern at this point is, how do I, given the life I've led, how do I get to heaven to see my dead son and still tell this story that's obviously a lie?
Both of you have performed Shakespeare over your careers. Does that inform the way you approach these roles?
I think it must, you know, somehow, in terms of lived in that world textually and in the stories for a long time. But then I think, you know, fundamentally when we get to rehearsal, you just have to play it like, I mean, these guys are, I mean, they talk about their mortgages and being homeowners and husbands and fathers. And so you have to kind of play it with, you know, that this is your job and take some of that kind of stuff out of it, the immortal
also,
part.
It's a very American play. And these characters are very American, so much so that Bill insisted that we speak in our own voices.
Of course, there's a chance that people spoke with what now sounds like an American accent
during
Shakespeare's time.
Very true. I also find that in the short sequences in the play where we're actually using lines from Shakespeare's plays, they have often such a specific comedic function in Bill's world that you're not really doing the play. You're doing Bill's version of the play.
But you have to feel like you're just going back into the world you're very comfortable with. You were also in Mary Stuart, weren't you?
I was, yeah, yeah. That was a tremendous experience.
Again, about Catholics and Protestants.
Very much so, very much so. Just a little bit earlier in time.
And with two incredible actresses.
Two of the most wonderful actresses I've ever worked with in my life.
Jenna McTeer was just here now because she's in God of Carnage. We
right.
talked about her performance in that.
Doing the role that she originally did in England, actually. And she had to choose, as I understand it, between doing that role here in New York and doing Mary Stuart. But she and Phyllida Lloyd had worked very intensely on developing this Mary Stuart piece, so she chose to stay with that at the time.
You also both appear in films. So what's next? Films? Another play? Because this equivocation is closing this Sunday, isn't it?
That's right. On the 28th. And then, you know, I don't know about Michael. It's back into the mix. But, you know, one of the nice things about New York is you don't necessarily have to choose solely between film or theater or television. It's, you know, there's a lot of it here. And so you can do a little bit of everything.
As long as there's law and order, there's always
basically whatever they'll hire you to do.
That's
you know?
Right.
I'm actually going to start rehearsals in 3 weeks for a new play at the George Street Playhouse called Creating Claire.
I want to thank the two of you so much for being on this show today, Michael Countryman, David Furr, in the Manhattan Theater Club's production of Equivocation, which is at the New York City Center at 131 West 55th Street through this Sunday, March 28th. It's been a great pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having us.